We'll electrify you with the October 29, 2010 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is The Rain Report, available as a weekly podcast and download from therainreport.com. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. This week we conclude our excerpts from the 2010 Dayton Hamvention presentation on RFI basics by Ed Hare, W1RFI, laboratory manager for the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League.
Well, what is power line noise anyway? Think spark transmitter. I mean, back then, long before we did tubes, hands were doing spark, and they literally had a little sparking source hooked up to a bunch of wires. Well, that sounds a lot like a power line noise source to me, and you're generally dealing with an arc or a spark somewhere on the electrical lines that are conducting a noise signal onto the wire and making a lot of noise at your station. Typically, there's a lot of things that'll help you identify power line noise. It's going to have a harsh or raspy buzz. In fact, if you go to the AM mode, you'll typically hear a strong 120 hertz component to that. It's relatively constant across spectrum. So if you were to tune, say, the 80 meter band and hear that very steadily across the band, or maybe varying by a few dB from one end to the other as your antenna or the noise source varies, but constant with frequency, that's also a pretty good indicator that it's power line noise. At close range, you can even hear it up as high as a gigahertz or so. Identifying that typical characteristics of power line noise is important. Another aspect you'll find with power line noise is it varies a lot, typically, with weather. More often than not, rain makes it go away. So if you're dealing with a noise that's there when it's dry and cold and goes away in the warm rain, you're at least dealing with something that's outside, because that moisture on it is typically going to be a real dead giveaway. And it's going to have a strong 120 hertz component as a rule, and occasionally 60 hertz. The pure sine wave with no noise, it's a sine wave. That's 60 hertz. There's nothing else there. But the minute you put a noise source on it, you'll notice at the positive and negative peaks, that's when the voltage on that line gets big enough to jump the gap. In fact, power line noise is often called gap noise in the utility industry. There's a small gap, and when they've got the positive peak and the negative peak, the voltage exceeds what the gap can do. It breaks down and it makes an arc or a spark. And if you're looking at that on your receiver, what you'll see is you'll see at 120 hertz rate, positive and negative peaks, a burst of noise. So on the receiver, you'll typically hear that 120 hertz pretty strong, occasionally almost like a hum. Well, that burst rate's an important clue. If a noise is not occurring at 120 or 60 bursts per second, it's not power line related. In fact, if you look at that on an oscilloscope, you should see that burst typically every 8 and a third or 16 and two-thirds milliseconds. That's going to translate to your 60 or 120 hertz filtering. Now, back in the analog days, we haven't updated this since the conversion. On an analog TV set, you would often see two lines of noise, if you're close to that source, that would be moving slowly up the screen. The vertical rate was 59.94 hertz on your TV screen. You're dealing with a 60 hertz noise, it's moving up. Well, what you'll see now, of course, if you turn on your old analog TV, is a bunch of noise. But you'll typically see those two bars, but they might be moving up or down the screen as the free-running frequency of that oscillator in the TV is approximately 60 hertz. But if you end up seeing those two bars on an old analog TV, that's also a pretty good giveaway that it's electrically related. So, okay, you've decided now, it's my power company. There's no doubt. I've checked my house. I checked my neighbor's house. It goes in the way of the rain. I swing my beam off in that direction, and it's stronger there. I drive my car to my AM radio, and it gets louder there. I'm convinced this is all adding up. It's my power company. Well, it may be right, and I think at that point, it's a fair assumption to assume that it's time to contact the power company. Under the rules, if it is their equipment, that utility must fix it. Now, ARRL has, over the years, developed a cooperative program with the FCC. It kind of stemmed, going back maybe 6-7 years now, when a group of hams on the West Coast were having problems with Pacific Gas and Electric. They contacted Riley Hollingsworth. Riley says, well, we've never written those kind of letters, but yeah, I'd be willing to help. And one little step at a time, we built that up into something that Riley actually called a memorandum of understanding. It wasn't quite. But we have a program with the FCC where we'll try to work with the amateurs to get this resolved with their utility company. If that doesn't work out, we can turn cases over to them. And they used to get the Riley letter. Now they get the Laura letter. That whole process starts with you. Because if you call the ARRL up and say, I'm having power line noise, what should I do? We'll say, well, what have you done? If the answer is nothing, we'll suggest that you first read our web page on it, you run through the steps, try to resolve it with your power company. Probably about a third of the power companies in the country actually have some sort of an RFI program and at least make a bona fide attempt to resolve problems. It's sometimes a difficult, long process, but if your power company is willing to work with you, you're not going to need me to help, at least not to begin with. What if you call your power company and one of two things happens is either they do nothing, which happens, or they go on for months and months and months with really half-hearted efforts and they're not really trying. They say, well, maybe we'll send a guy out in February when the weather gets a little warmer or when the weather gets a little cooler. It may be time to take some next steps. Now understand, the utilities see this from a different perspective than you do. They deliver power. This radio noise to a hobby doesn't necessarily mean the same to them as what we see as radio noise to a licensed radio service. It's a different perspective. They're also generally concerned, because I've talked to a lot of utilities, that some hams are on a crusade trying to find every noise source. Well, even that simple test I says, well, you got in your car and you drove your AM radio to the source. It's the right thing to do for troubleshooting. But to them, well, this guy's driving around looking for every little noise he can find and reporting it to the utility. Hams also need to be prepared and willing to work with the utility company. I've run across a few instances where hams have just said, no, I'm not going to work with the utility. It's their job to fix it, and by golly, they're going to do it. That's probably not going to work out well. You can't just tell them to go fix the problem without you, because the whole troubleshooting process starts in your own station. I'll show you some of the tools that a good utility will be using to bring equipment into your station, look at your noise, and then go out and compare that noise to what they found out in the world. Because if you have a noise source a mile away, it could be causing you moderate level interference. But in between that one you hear are a number of little sources that you don't hear. They just don't propagate down the line. So having the utility fix six things that aren't it might make them get very, very discouraged and decide they're not going to do anymore. Obviously, the ham is never going to be satisfied. He'll just always find another problem to complain about. Now, from the ham's perspective as well, none of those things you did fixed my noise. You're right, but to them, they fixed a bunch of noise that didn't seem to help. I've seen a lot of variation in the utility's ability and even willingness to handle RFI complaints. Some find them and fix them quickly. I've had hams tell me, I called my utility yet, and 3 days later the truck was there and the noise was gone. Good. Others lack the necessary equipment and expertise. That's not necessarily faulting them. They just don't understand radio. They don't understand RF. Every couple of years, RFI Services does a course at ARRL headquarters. We open up the facility. He invites in a bunch of utilities. He's charging them money. That's fine. But I see the utility guys straight up, and I see these guys when Mike Martin, K3RFI, is talking about, well, use attenuators and the antennas and all that. It's going over their heads. They're missing it. I've heard of utilities going out and checking out a ham station, hearing noise on 3.5 megahertz, connecting up their test receiver to this antenna, tuning it to 3.5 megahertz and saying, there's no noise here, what's the problem? And they're in the guy's own backyard. It's not malice, it's just simply ignorance. They don't understand RF the way we do.
You're listening to some RFI basics from ARRL Lab Manager Ed Hare, W1RFI. We'll conclude our excerpts from Ed's presentation in a moment after I remind you that Rain is on Twitter. Go to twitter.com/TheRainReport and be one of the first to know about the new Rain Report each week.
The first thing you're going to do is start working with a utility company with the understanding that these guys are not necessarily as savvy as you. Personal diplomacy is a must. When you're dealing with someone who sees a problem differently than you do, it's very, very easy for emotions on either side to get in the way. And if you or they do not remain calm and respectful of each other's views, and try to help each other understand what the needs are, these things are going to fall apart pretty badly. I've seen too many cases where utilities take the high horse road, where hams take the high horse road, and these generally don't go well for either party. Now, what if your utility is one of the good guys? Well, you're first going to call them up. You're going to file a complaint through the normal customer service channels, and your complaint will then be handled in a timely fashion. They'll send out an RFI investigator who will know what he or she is doing. They'll find the noise source. They'll correlate it to your own station. They'll schedule a repair, and in a few weeks, the problem will be fixed. Well, not everybody's this lucky. What if your utility is not one of the good guys? Well, if you learn some locating techniques and help them find the problem, it's more likely that they'll actually be able to fix it. The program we have with the FCC can also help. Typically, when Laura Smith receives an inquiry from a ham, she'll often send it right to Mike Gruber. Mike, do what you can to work this out. Let me know if you need our help. ARRL's role is primarily a technical one. And, you know, Laura Smith and Riley had sent out letters, but behind each of those letters is typically anywhere from 20 to as many as a couple of hundred ARRL staff hours. So we put a lot into trying to resolve power line noise. Well, what is this ARRL cooperative agreement? Well, I'll say right now, it's not a fast or easy solution. The entire premise of, we call a utility company, we've got to get through their customer service agents. They've got to schedule an RFI troubleshooter who has to know what he or she is doing. They have to come off and work with us, schedule time with us, find the correct source, and then try to schedule a repair crew. And by the way, if the hospital across town loses power the day they were scheduled, you're getting rescheduled. And then, of course, you have what I call the B-O-L syndrome. That's the big, ugly lineman who climbs the pole, sees the insulator, and says, oh, what are they talking about? I've seen cracked insulators like that work for years. Marks the solution, the thing is problem solved, goes away. And, of course, the flaw is nobody talked to the amateur to see if it goes away. Now, the utility thinks they fixed the problem. The ham thinks they didn't. And things can go downhill. But the point is that throughout that process, if you look at all those steps, and in a large utility, it's a cumbersome process, these things get resolved typically in a matter of months, not weeks, days, or hours. Under this process, initially, we suggest the amateur work with the power company. If that doesn't work, we then send the power company an advisory letter under our letterhead, containing, by the way, a package of information about that thick with all sorts of good information that's provided to the utility on how to resolve power line noise. That's got a 60-day window, where, in other words, the FCC says, look, when you contact them, don't talk to us for the next 60 days. That should give more than enough time for all those different steps to go through and happen. If that doesn't work, then Laura is able to write a letter to the utility. We send these right to the CEO. I mean, at this point, we've documented the fact that Ham has tried to work with it. We know who the utility is. We know how to contact them. So it's all provided pretty ready to go to Laura, who then, if she agrees that the case merits FCC attention, sends out an advisory letter that looks remarkably like the one we've sent out, giving them 60 days to contact the FCC or to get it resolved or to let the FCC know where it stands. Now, Laura has actually improved the process for the second letters, because those letters now go out. If the FCC doesn't get a satisfactory response from the utility, that second letter goes out that says, by the way, we've contacted you, we haven't heard from you. So you now have 30 days to resolve it, or from thenceforth, give me biweekly reports on your progress at resolving this case. And, you know, not a single utility guy wants to have to write a single one of those biweekly reports, not surprisingly. So at that point, I think we've seen some improvement in the number of cases. Now, the other one, though, is we've seen cases drag on for years, and some of those are baffling to me. We had a case in Georgia. Mike Gruber went to Georgia. He's doing a presentation like this. One of the guys in the back says, Mike, I'm your complainant over here in Georgia, and I'm 15 miles away. And Mike says, well, you know, I don't want to spend tomorrow hanging out at the league booth all day. So let me go to your house tomorrow, and we'll see if we can find the noise. Now, this case is a 10-year-old case. This ham has been very persistent. We love him for it. Mike goes out, and Mike's showing him some of the equipment. We have a radar engineer's equipment here to help identify power line noise. He turns it on in his driveway. He unpacks it. He turns it on, and he says, here, let me show you what it works. He hooks up the antenna. He hears this loud buzz right in the guy's driveway. He takes this directional antenna. He points it around, and there it is, that pole right outside the guy's house. This utility had spent 10 years not fixing a problem. It took Mike 15 seconds to locate. And so had they put any kind of a reasonable effort into this, you'd think over 10 years they could have found it. No, they had the CEO of that company, they had the lawyers, they had all of these people corresponding back and forth with the FCC, all to avoid having to do this over the course of 15 seconds. Getting the correct source identified is important, because if you end up having that utility fix six different things that don't correct your noise, they'll become frustrated. The wasted expense and time is added to their repair list. And you know, some hams, and I've seen it, literally a ham says, oh, I'm gonna drive around and I'm gonna find every noise source within a mile of my house and get them to fix it. Well, he's only hearing one or two of them, but yet he's got the utility out chasing all these ghosts, and frankly, it has been a very difficult job for us to keep that utility on track and have them working on the problems. They'll often make the repairs. I mean, some guy told me what pole it's on, great, we'll fix it, he'll be happy, and my boss will love me, and they fix it, and he's not happy, and his boss goes, why did you do that? You're better off if you don't make a guess at what the actual noise source is before asking the utility to fix it.
And that concludes our excerpts from the 2010 Dayton Hamvention presentation by Ed Hare, W1RFI, Laboratory Manager for the American Radio Relay League. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2010. RAIN. All rights reserved. Now for RAIN's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com.